You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Welcome to the Anarchist World this week, broadcast across Australia, courtesy of the Community Radio Network, streaming live on 3cr.org.au around the world. Well, around planet Earth, not the universe. If you wonder what anarchy is all about, anarchos, without rulers, not without rules, without rulers. It's a society without rulers. What gives rulers the ability to determine the lives of billions of people as we see every day of our lives? Inequalities in power and wealth. So the anarchist struggle is the struggle to share power, possibly through direct democratic means, and the struggle to hold wealth in common and use it for the common good. Motherhood statements. But it's fascinating how many people recoil when you mention the word anarchism, you know. Somehow people think it's about chaos, because obviously you and I are tainted with original sin. We can't be trusted to govern ourselves in a cooperative, collective manner. What we need to do, you know, is to have rulers to tell us what to do, how high to jump, and to make us die for their aspirations. All right, let's move on. USA puts the Israeli attack dog on the leash. Now, you may have been influenced by all the propaganda, not just on social media, but on the corporate-owned media and the government-gilded ABC regarding the peace accord or the ceasefire accord in Gaza. And the buffoon in Washington did his normal little trick, wandering around, bowing, taking the glory. I mean, what we've seen happen in Gaza over the last 2 years is the worst atrocities that have occurred on planet Earth since the beginning of the 21st century. That's the beginning of the 21st century. At any time, the United States of America, whether it was under Biden or under Trump, could put the Israeli attack dog on a leash. And what we've seen is that the Israeli attack dog has been put on a leash with threats, possibly, that they no longer would be armed or supported to the hilt by the United States of America. So the current peace deal, or ceasefire deal, whatever you like to call it, puts us back to the 6th of October 2023, the day before the Hamas incursion and massacre in southern Israel. Nothing has changed. The killing has temporarily stopped, but the genocide continues. The use of aid as a weapon continues. The fact that over 2 million people had been living in the world's biggest prison for 15 years seemed to be irrelevant. The fact that the Palestinian people have aspirations to have their own sovereign nation state is irrelevant as far as this peace deal is about. So it reminds me of an old adage, no peace without justice. No peace without justice. And the fact that 2 million people have been put through the horrors they've been put through, where infrastructure has been totally annihilated, over 250 reporters from Gaza, many citizens reporter, have been killed. Over 25,000 children have been murdered. And the list goes on and on. The fact is, it's not just about the 67,000 who have died directly as a result of the Israeli attack dog, but the fact that this was, as the United Nations has declared, a war of genocide on the Palestinian people. Now, I don't use that word lightly. I didn't use the word genocide on this program. Well, many other people did until the United Nations came to its conclusion. This current peace accord reminds me of the peace accord that occurred after World War I, when the Western powers put these inordinate demands on Germany for repatriations, which created the conditions which saw the rise of the Nazi Party and the subsequent death of over 50 million people worldwide in World War II. This is a peace with no justice, none whatsoever. And until justice is achieved through the creation of a sovereign Palestinian state, there will be no peace. Can you imagine the children who have lived through this carnage over the last 2 years, the damage that has been created, and the type of individual that will be ripe for recruiting into Palestinian resistance for decades to come? If there's one thing the world has forgotten, is that the desire for people to live in their own sovereign nation state under their own laws is something which is fundamental. And it doesn't matter the height of the atrocities which occur against people seeking independence, that independence struggle will continue, whether it's West Papua or whether it's Gaza, whether it's the continuing struggle in Australia by this country's First Nations people. The fact is, there is no peace without justice. And justice in terms of Indigenous Australians is about treaty. And justice for Palestinians and West Papuans is the creation of an independent state. You're listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live on 3cr.org.au. Well, you may not realise it today, but today is the 55th anniversary, the 15th of October, of the Westgate Bridge catastrophe in 1970. It's the 55th anniversary. Australia's worst workplace accident since Federation. At 11:50 a.m. on the 15th of October 1970, 35 workers on the Westgate Bridge were killed, 18 were injured when a 112-metre span of the bridge collapsed onto Pier 10 and Pier 11. Now, this was not something that was unavoidable. A number of bridges had collapsed previously to the Westgate Bridge collapse on the 15th of October. In November 1969, in the early hours of the morning, a bridge that had been followed the same design collapsed in Vienna with no fatalities. In June 1970, the Millhaven Bridge under construction in England, collapsed, killing 4 workers. The same company, Freeman, Fox and Partners, which oversaw the Millhaven Bridge collapse in June 1970, stated that it would have, it has no relationship to the construction of the Westgate Bridge. Now, the 1971 Royal Commission into the Westgate Bridge collapsed highlighted that this was about structural and construction flaws. Structural and construction flaws. I'll give you an example. You've got to think of the Westgate Bridge. There's the city end and the Williamstown end. Those of you who've crossed the bridge, I assume all of you have crossed the bridge at some stage in your life. When the bridge was being constructed in 1970, there were buckles in the bridge construction in the city end, which were resolved through a little bit of creative engineering. When the two major pieces on the Williamstown end didn't fit together, I think there was a gap of about 110 centimetres between the two parts of the bridge. After a lot of consultation, it was decided to put 50 tonnes weight, I think, on either side of the, or one side of the bridge, that's the Williamstown end, so it could be slowly come down and join the other side of the bridge. As the bolts were removed, the tension on the remaining bolts increased, and once the 37th bolt was removed, the bridge collapsed. This was not an accident. This was death waiting to occur. And it wasn't till 1978 that the Westgate Bridge was actually completed. So at 11:50 a.m. is the exact moment on the 15th of October 1970 that the bridge collapsed. Now this year on Radical Australia, which we will be doing between 4 and 5 o'clock this afternoon, and that program will be podcast, I'll be doing an introduction to the Westgate Bridge Memorial broadcast, which was broadcast in 2022, to pay homage to those people killed, their families, their friends, and those who are injured. Many of them who are injured would be in their 80s now. And I think it's important we remember, not just because of Westgate, but remember that deaths in workplaces are occurring with monotonous regularity. When somebody goes to work, it's important that their safety is paramount, not the fact that there is a contract to fulfill or a deadline to approach or a profit to be made. If you want to, you know, look at this, look at the ridiculous situation gig delivery drivers find themselves in, where a significant proportion don't even make the basic wage. And every minute of the day, as they're whizzing around, they find themselves liable to injury and death. And when injury and death occurs, there's no compensation. Their employers shrug their shoulders and say they're independent contractors. We have seen an increase in the number of workplace-related deaths in the last few years as corners are cut to increase profitability, as the trade union movement collapses and dissolves, where people find themselves on individual contracts, where people find themselves not covered by a workers' compensation scheme, and even those that are injured at work find the workers' compensation scheme, especially because of changes in legislation in the last 2 or 3 years, is they're actually not covered. You're listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. So don't forget, today, 4 p.m, we'll be repeating on Radical Australia the Westgate Bridge Memorial 2022 Memorial broadcast, and I'll be doing an introduction to that broadcast. So I think this is one day. It's not just about remembering Australia's worst peacetime workplace accident, but remembering the fact that every day that people go to work in this country, with the collapse of trade union representation, the increased risks that workers are put at because of a failing safety culture, because of a failing workers' compensation system, and because somehow people on so-called contract workers, which are little more than a majority of cases than employees by another name, are not covered by the Workers' Compensation Act. Let's move on. The Tale of Two Governments. I'm sad today. You know, I'm really sad. Why am I sad? Am I sad because I'm here? Well, no, not really. It's therapy, isn't it? The Tale of Two Governments. Now, I find this hard to believe, but that's the beauty of being able to broadcast on The Anarchist World This Week. We can make the unbelievable believable by tearing away the seven scarves which are hiding the truth. Now, the Albanese-led Labor government has the greatest majority, of not only of a Labor government, but I think of a Conservative government, in the history of Federation. It has a sympathetic Senate where the upper house is controlled by the Greens, who would like to push things a little bit more in a so-called left direction or an egalitarian direction. So you would think that this government, especially since it was elected less than 6 months ago, would be willing to put a bit of juicy legislation through Parliament to ensure a more equitable distribution of wealth in this country. Now, I know that you care. I know that you care about the rich and powerful, like I do. And I was shocked. Well, I'm feigning shock at the minute, obviously, to see the federal Labor government fall on its sword regarding its superannuation legislation. Now, this superannuation legislation did not involve hundreds of thousands of millions of Australians, working Australians. It involved 94,000 Australians, mainly in self-made super funds, who had more than $3 million in their accounts, and it involved 7,500 Australians with more than $10 million in their superannuation account. Now, I know that if you've got 10 mil, even at 4% interest, that's enough to live the life of Riley. And obviously, people put money in superannuation for taxation advantages. And the federal government, faced with this rort, which has been carried out by about 100,000 Australians, felt, well, the Treasurer, Mr. Chalmers, felt that maybe there should be some changes to the superannuation laws for people who have more than $3 million in their superannuation accounts. Now, unless you're a CEO of a major corporation, I don't think you'd have more than $3 million in your superannuation account. I think most superannuation accounts have around $250,000 to $300,000 on retirement. And if you are a single parent, or if you did, you know, you stayed at home to look after children, or you had kids, you know, your superannuation balance is much, much less than that. So why has the government rolled over? Why did it roll over? Now, if we go back 50 years to the Whitlam-led Labor government, 50 years, a government which is hell-bent not on protecting the privileges of the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication, but redistributing wealth. Within 4 years, with a hostile Senate, never having a Senate majority, having to go to a double disillusion election in 1974, they passed over 250 pieces of legislation within 1,150 days. Now, the Albanese-led Labor government has been in power for the same time, and I am struggling to work out what types of pieces of legislation they've passed in terms of economic redistribution, in terms of increasing the tax take from the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication. And there are very few things. I mean, the Whitlam-led Labor government introduced no-fault divorce, introduced funding for legal aid centres, introduced pensions for single mothers, single parents, which didn't exist. It increased pensions by about 84%. Introduced free tertiary education. And the list goes on. Introduced Medicare, one of the greatest, most important pieces of reformist legislation in this country's history, which generations of Australians have benefited from. Every time you go to a local doctor and a bulk billed, every time you go to a radiology facility or a pathology facility and you're bulk billed, it's a result of that Medicare legislation which was passed by the Whitlam-led Labor government after a double disillusion election, which allowed its five-seat majority in the Senate and the House of Reps to pass that legislation. Now, if you look at most of the commentary regarding what happened during that period, we are told it was a dysfunctional government. But the fact is that so much of the legislative agenda that was put through in those days, I wouldn't be broadcasting today. There would be no community radio network in this country. It was the Whitlam and Labor government, which introduced community radio license to try to break the monopoly of the press barons, the Murdochs of the world. Introduced legislation to create community health centres. And the list goes on and on. But we forget. We forget. What's happened is that a government which was interested in economic redistribution and increasing the tax take, which called itself Labor, has now been replaced by a government which calls itself Labor, that's more interested in looking after the interests of that small section of society than the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication and the investment class in this country, than the interests of the great majority of people in this country. And nothing highlights this more than their so-called housing agenda. That's right, the housing agenda, where they say they pull every lever to resolve the housing crisis and prices continue to increase. Well, obviously, the only lever they're not willing to talk about, let alone pull, is the public housing lever. But that's another story for another day. Just in case you are interested in that, I'll be doing a presentation tonight at the Footscray Hotel at 48 Hopkins Street in Footscray in Melbourne, 6:30 p.m. for a 7 p.m. start, which looks at the history of public housing in Australia, mainly in Victoria. It's part of the submission I made to the Legislative Council, because Victorian Legislative Council, because they're holding an inquiry into the public housing. Well, not public housing, basically into the destruction of the public housing towers around Melbourne. And 2 days before I was issued an invitation to address the Legislative Council inquiry, 2 days before I was issued the invitation, 2 days after I was issued the invitation was removed. So I thought, well, why not share it with the mass of people? It will be videoed, and it'll go on the YouTube channel, josephtoscano.nam, which is a YouTube channel I've created to bring to attention people's radical history of this country. All right, so the tale of two governments. Generation Z. Corruption busters. You like that? We're told constantly that, you know, the young people have no interest in radical change. Well, there's nothing like a bit of bashing around the head to get you interested in radical change. And Generation Z, irrespective of where they find themselves in the world, a generation which is happy to embrace the liberty of communication which social media gives them with political action. Not political action based on begging and beseeching for reforms. Not political action based on parliamentary politics, but political action based on direct action. And over the last few years, we have seen massive examples of Generation Z flexing their muscle, understanding legislation changes on the streets. The type of legislation which is put to Parliament for ratification depends on the amount of civil disobedience and civil unrest. And Generation Z doesn't classify itself as anarchist or communist or socialist or capitalist. It classifies itself as an exploited generation. And nothing highlights this more than what we see in Australia in 2025. Where they have to pay for their education and then spend decades paying back that debt. And obviously the poorer you are, the longer it takes you to pay down your hex debt. And if you've got rich parents or supporters, you don't have a hex debt. And then you get in the rat race. I've been involved in part-time contract work where you're basically offered short-term contracts in order to keep body and soul together. And then you find you can't raise enough money for a deposit on a house, and housing is about security of tenure, the ability to live in the same place, use the same, you know, and create your own social network. And Generation Z is out there paying for all those investors in the housing market who claim a tax deduction through negative gearing. And obviously in some countries, what we see is people who are theoretically representatives enriching themselves and enriching their families and friends. you know, enriching themselves, and the public being ostracised, marginalised, criminalised. Over the last few months, we've seen Generation Z rise up in Indonesia, where the president had to come out of his bunker to hose it all down. We saw Generation Z in Nepal bring down a corrupt, self-serving government. As I speak, we see Generation Z bringing down the corrupt government in Madagascar, irrespective of the French government's intervention in that revolt. We see Generation Z in Myanmar taking up arms against the military dictatorship which has ruled Myanmar since the end of World War II, created by the Japanese imperial forces as a mechanism to keep the population down. We see Generation Z around the Arab world, been involved in resistance to the Israeli attack dog. And the list goes on and on. So I haven't lost any faith in this country's young people. And I'll tell you why. Because my generation, the baby boomers, we have let down our children and grandchildren in the pursuit of the almighty dollar. As we enjoy, well, not everybody, but as, you know, some people enjoy their retirement taking cruise after cruise, or find themselves in the position where they have to bankroll their kids to get a foothold in society, where we see the planet burn because of the climate emergency, which is totally been created for our desire to create ever-increasing profits irrespective of the human, social and environmental costs. And although many young people find themselves, you know, seduced by the rising authoritarian tendencies, thinking that migration, the transgender, the gay, is somehow the beginning of the end for them, the fact is there's a greater number who begin to understand that it's about corruption, it's about power. And if there is no social elevator by which people can actually improve their lives, then this is what happens. Explosions occur, and sometimes they occur in places we would never expect them to occur. So while Mr. Albanese organises his retirement in his $4 million home on the coast, and good luck to him, I'd just like to remind him of two facts. Not that he would be listening to The Anarchist World this week, but maybe one of his minions will be taking notes. Two facts. Three facts, actually. Shows you how stupid I am. Three facts. One, you grew up in public housing, publicly owned, publicly managed. Not social housing, not community housing, not affordable housing, not inclusive housing. Having that security of not having to move from year to year because of problems regarding rent gave you the foundation to become Prime Minister of this country. Secondly, your mother was a single parent. She benefited from the Whitlam Labor government legislation in 1973, which introduced pensions for single mothers, which meant that women didn't have to give up their children for adoption because of economic factors or because of ostracization from society and their families. And three, don't forget you received a free tertiary education courtesy of the Whitlam-led Labor government. the Albanese-led Labor government has the potential to pass groundbreaking legislation in terms of increasing taxation revenue to provide for the increasing needs an ageing population creates. You can go down in history as a government that did nothing. Nothing of any consequence. The Whitlam Labor government introduced Medicare. The Julia Gillard-led Labor government introduced the National Disability Insurance Scheme. The Morrison-led Liberal coalition introduced robo-debt. I just thought I'd throw that in for a bit of a laugh. Not that it's a laugh. It's a little bit like theatre of the absurd, you know, when you come here on the Anarchist World this week, you know. I do my best. I'm a volunteer. I don't get paid for this crap, you know. I do my best. And what I do is I try on your behalf, because I know you've got better sense than I do, to look at the news of the week and try to make some sense of it. But some weeks it's just totally absurd. Totally absurd. Not just about the characters, and I call them characters, you know, that have such a profound impact on people's lives, but the absurd way things are analysed, things are presented to us. I mean, nothing highlights this than what's happened in the last few days regarding the so-called Gaza peace accord. The theatre of the absurd. The buffoon running around trying to claim his Nobel Peace Prize for 2026. Obviously the killing has stopped, but it could have stopped a year ago. It could have stopped 18 months ago. It just goes on. The theatre of the absurd. Mr. Albanese, carry on to Mr. Chalmers, the Treasurer. Look, you can't do this to the 94,000 superannuants with more than $3 million in their account, or more than $10 million in their account. You need to go softly, softly, mate. You know, extraordinary. It's about time Chalmers threw him out. But that's a different story. Maybe that'll happen in a year or two. I mean, here we have the boy who made good. Public housing, single parents benefit, three education, pulled himself up by his bootstraps, has become Prime Minister, and has forgotten where he came from. And that's the key to life. And that's what happens to so many people. And that's what's not... doesn't happen to the listeners to the Anarchist World this week, and it doesn't happen to me. We remember where we came from. We remember how difficult it was. We remember. And we don't want the same thing happening to future generations. And that's the difference between being a paid-up member of the theatre of the absurd and being an independent human being who can actually look at the world as it is and present it as it is, because obviously the emperor has no clothes. Let's move on. Now, I know that the... it was about 2 years ago, wasn't it? The referendum regarding a voice to parliament. And people said there were people, you know, from the Aboriginal community and Torres Strait Islander community. And there were people from the left. And there were people from the right. And there were racists. They all got together and they defeated the bill, saying, what's the point? Well, I'll tell you what the point is. For 3 years, could be four, Victoria's First Nations people have been negotiating with Victorian government for a treaty, all right? So when is a treaty not a treaty? You see, if the voice to parliament had been enshrined in the constitution, no government of any political hue could have actually abolished that entity. It would be only the Australian people through a referendum who could abolish that entity. And that's the beauty about constitutional recognition. We've had all this, you know, discussion and meetings and marches and papers, and we even, as I speak, there'll be legislation in the Victorian Parliament to create this treaty. All right? And everybody thinks, well, a treaty is forever. Well, it's not if it's a state treaty. The Victorian Constitution is written by Parliament. Nothing in the Victorian Constitution is guaranteed. Because if there's a change of government, Parliament can pass legislation to change what you think is a constitutional arrangement. So even if the treaty is passed, which it will be passed, if there is a government of a different hue in 2 years' time in Victoria, end of next year, they have made it very clear that they will abolish the treaty. And they have the legal power to abolish the treaty. The legal power, as far as the Victorian Constitution is concerned. So what's the point of all that energy, all that work, all those meetings, if an opposition party can stir up the racist pot and create conflict in the community between First Nations people and the rest of us and scrap the treaty? Think about it. But on a federal level, through a referendum, it's a different matter. But the only problem with referendums is they tend to be hijacked by the likes of Dutton to promote their one-eyed agenda that terra nullius, the land of no one, is not legal fiction but a legal reality. You listen to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. Now, I think you've been through the privatisation tsunami. You know, we've spoken about this ad nauseum on this program. I'm also convener of a little group called Public Interest Before Corporate Interest, which means putting the interests of the many before the few. That's what the public is, the many. Corporate is the few. Simple concept. Difficult concept to raise in the community. Most people don't even know what public is. And when you talk about public, they think, oh, public. It's disgusting, it's bad, it's filthy, it's evil. And why do we think that? Well, I don't, but, you know, significant proportion of the population thinks. Because it's underfunded, under-resources. Public housing, public education, public health, public infrastructure. Because there isn't that Generation Z momentum in this country to go out on the streets and ask, push, demand for greater equality. It's not there. So what we see is public institutions are starved of funds, and we see private institutions, we see public assets that have been privatised enrich a minority. Privatisation of Qantas, privatisation of telecom, privatisation of the Commonwealth Bank, privatisation of Medibank Private, and the list goes on. But there is one organisation that hasn't been privatised in this country, and that is the Commonwealth Serum Industrial Research Organisation, CSIRO. Not CSL, which was privatised by Mr Keating for the princely sum of $2.58, now it's worth around $300 a share, but that's a different story. The Commonwealth Scientific Industrial Research Organisation. But guess what? It is now on the privatisation chopping block. Government funding to the tune of over $120 million has been withdrawn from the CSIRO, which is Australia's paramount research organisation, which has been responsible for extraordinary discoveries which have helped an extraordinary number of people, not just individuals, but even corporations and businesses. But now we are funding the Commonwealth government, because it is a Commonwealth entity, is starving it of funds. And we are seeing hundreds of workers in CSIRO, people with a lifetime of experience, being retrenched because of these funding cuts. But the minister responsible stands up in Parliament, lies through his teeth and says there are no funding cuts. It's just a restructure. Now, I've seen this over and over and over again, where governments prepare public entities for privatisation by slimming them down and make them look like it's a profitable institution. The loss of the CSIRO has a significant organisation, which is publicly owned in this country, will have a profound impact, not just on individuals, but on industry. And if the Albanese-led Labor government is really, really interested in its Australia-led recovery manufacturing program, it should be doubling the resources for the CSIRO, not decreasing them. And see, and that's the issue. The issue is, if you live in a country where the taxation or the revenue base is basically lies on the backs of pay-as-you-earn employees, and almost 70% of taxation revenue in this country doesn't come from corporate taxation, doesn't come from royalties, doesn't come from excise duties. It comes from the back of employees who are not in a position to legally minimise their taxation as people who are self-employed, or more importantly, you know, major cogs in major corporations, where we see people making millions of dollars and through legally, and that's the key, legally minimise taxation strategies, minimise taxation revenue. And if they're not even willing as a government to put forward the taxation revenue that they incentives, the taxation revenue as far as superannuation is concerned, for people with more than $3 million in their superannuation accounts, what hope is there for the rest of us? So it filters through. So there's not enough money for healthcare. There's not enough money for public education. There's not enough money for the CSIRO. There's never enough resources for these organisations because of the situation people find themselves in, because we are allowing the 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication to get away with murder. And I mean murder. I mean, poor old Lydia Forbes, Senator Lydia Forbes, said she was going to burn up Parliament House and now she's part of an investigation. I mean, they get away with murder because people die waiting on the public waiting lists. People's futures are blighted because of the lack of resources in the public education sector. You know, and the list goes on and on. There are real-world consequences. 1 in 7 Australians live in abject poverty. Just an extraordinary situation to find ourselves in one of the richest countries on earth. We used to call ourselves an egalitarian community, but the fact is we've never been an egalitarian community. But what we've seen in the last 20 years is the biggest transfer of public land into private hands for peppercorn returns. Extraordinary. Could you imagine if we had had the resilience and the intelligence of the Norwegian governments, which when they realised they had all these oil-rich resources, ensured that money made didn't just go into corporate pockets, it went into the hands of Norwegian citizens, and now they have $3 trillion in their future fund. 48 weeks maternity leave, fully paid. Not at the basic rate, and the list goes on and on. 3 education, 3 healthcare, goes on and on. Because they were able to use their resources to benefit their people we use our resources to benefit the corporate sector. The situation is so ridiculous that we're one of the major gas exporters in the world, but can't even provide gas to the east coast of Australia for Australian industry because of the stranglehold the corporate sector has on this country. And if you think the opposition is any different, they are going to oppose the changes to superannuation in Parliament because they think there should be no changes. How extraordinary. How extraordinary. Generation Z, it's your time to rise up because we're not going to do it because we're too busy enjoying ourselves, spending your inheritance by going on cruises. You're listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia on the Community Radio Network. This program has been streaming live on 3cr.org.au. Pleasant messages can be left on 0439 395 489. Unpleasant messages you can play to yourself. You can actually write to me at Post Office Box 20, Parkville 3052. Post Office Box 20, Parkville 3052. The YouTube channels, Public Interest Before Corporate Interest, over 350 presentations. You can join Public Interest Before Corporate Interest right now. As soon as the program finishes, go to the website, pibci.net. Join today. Join today. Even if you're a member of Generation Z and you have got no faith in political parties, still join. All right. You can YouTube channels, I said, Public Interest Before Corporate Interest, josephtoscano.nam, web pages, anarchistmedia.org, the list goes on and on. It's there. Facebook pages, Joseph Toscano, other Facebook pages, there's millions of them. But the fact is Generation Z has demonstrated us in Madagascar, in Myanmar, in Nepal, in Indonesia. It's only when you go out on the streets demanding an end to inequality and corruption that things change. Thank you for listening to The Anarchist World This Week on your local community radio station, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. This program has been streaming live on 3cr.org.au. That's 3cr.org.au. It is podcast. Go to 3cr.org.au. Send the podcast to your friends and enemies. Make their day. Thank you once again for listening to The Anarchist World This Week on your local community radio station, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. Those pleasant people in Sydney who ensure that the voice of The Anarchist World This Week goes out across this country in multiple community radio stations. If it's not on your community radio station, give them a ring and ask them why not. Listen in next week.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.